Which Californian quarterback shook up the Georgia football world? And which two teams will play under the big lights of ESPN? This and more coming up on the Gwinnett Daily Post Football Friday podcast. It's Friday, October 30th, 2020. Welcome to the Gwinnett Daily Post Football Friday podcast. I'm your host, Marcel Fortune, and joined by Gwinnett Daily Post sports editor, Will Hammack. How are you doing today, Will?
Doing great. How about you?
I'm doing all right. It's been a very active weather period the past 24 hours in the state of Georgia. A lot of rain and a lot of trees down, but I think everyone is going to be healthy and ready to go. So hopefully that holds up for this Friday. So let's get started.
All right.
Today's top story is brought to you by Peggy Slappy Properties. The Georgia High School Association approved the eligibility of Grayson quarterback Jake Garcia on Monday, allowing the transfer to participate immediately with his new high school team, which is Grayson. He was previously at Valdosta. Garcia, a consensus four-star quarterback and Southern California commit, joins the Rams in time for Friday's matchup with Parkview, which will be on ESPN, and we'll get to that contest a little bit later in the show. But what's the word, Will, on this transfer? It seemed to come out of nowhere. And what are you hearing about it from your sources?
Yeah, it's I guess everybody that's not involved with Grayson is pretty upset by it. Nobody really understands how you can be ineligible at one to transfer from California to one high school in Georgia, but then suddenly be eligible to go anywhere else and play. So it's a little weird. Obviously, the opposing schools, opposing football programs are not real happy about it. I feel bad for the Grayson quarterbacks who are already there that have led the team to an unbeaten record, and you have a big-time recruit coming in with two or three games left in the regular season and going to play just those games in the playoffs. To me, it's kind of gross that it's happening. I think you like for the folks to say, no thanks, we got our quarterback set, we don't need you to move in, but obviously the kid's really talented and it probably makes Grayson a better football team, but you'd like for schools to maybe stand up for their own kids and say, hey, no, we have quarterbacks here. It's this late in the season. We're not going to take a transfer this late in the season. That would be the thing that I think a lot of people would like to see. It's school by school basis. If you think this is okay, I guess Grayson thinks it's okay to let the kid come in and play. But like I said, it's not a good look for Grayson. I don't think they didn't have a lot of friends statewide anyway because of all the transfers they've gotten over the years. And certainly taking a kid as a transfer this late in the season is not gonna win him any friends.
This is such a unique story because it's made national news. For those unfamiliar with it, he is a senior quarterback from the state of California. The state has not, as of this moment, I think they're going to play football in the spring or may not play at all. You know, it's a fluid situation with everything going on with the pandemic. So he transferred to the state of Georgia in Valdosta. His parents even legally separated. Yeah, so this story made ESPN outside the lines, and he was at Valdosta, and now I get he was declared ineligible at Valdosta, but with the same organization, GHSA, that made him ineligible, allowed him to be eligible in Grayson. Was it just a fact of they used hardship? Was it what was the reasoning really from GHSA about it?
I guess the move he made to Valdosta was not a bona fide move by their rules. The whole family unit didn't move, but when they moved a second time within Georgia, I guess they did make a bona fide move. Unit moved so they could move wherever they wanted in Georgia, but they were ineligible at Valdosta. So kind of had the free run of the state of Georgia. And obviously, if you're a transfer, you're going to pick a team that's got a chance to win a state championship at the end. So, yeah, I don't think he was looking at any of the lowly schools in the state that needed a quarterback. I think he was obviously looking at if you're looking to move, you're looking to move to a big time place. And Grayson's certainly a nationally ranked team that has a chance to win a state championship. So that's how he ended up there. But just, I don't know. It's just a weird thing for me to see. It's high school athletics. You want the kid to play a senior season, but playing your high school football career is supposed to be about representing your community and playing with your buddies and all your brothers. And this kid's already been to multiple high schools in California, and now he's moving to high school where he doesn't really know any folks and doesn't know his classmates. So it's not really about that. It's about him being able to play football on his own and win a championship. To me, the whole situation's kind of gross. I don't know. It's one of the weirder things I've seen happen in high school athletics. I just don't there's got to be a cutoff at some point where you can't accept a transfer. If somebody moves in, they got to be ineligible for 2 months or whatever. It just seems crazy to let somebody come in this late in the season and join a team and also knock kids out of playing time that have been playing in that position. Just the whole thing's kind of stinks to me.
And you mentioned a transfer. It, from my understanding, usually was if you could transfer within the county or within the school district, that was usually acceptable. But you mentioned Grayson has gotten players from, and then they're not, we're picking on Grayson because this story is about them, but around the state, you're seeing people move from different parts of Georgia, from South Georgia to Gwinnett or Cobb or the reverse of that. Is the transfer rules, have they just been ignored or do they just find more leeway? We see in the college game as well with the immediate eligibility of some people from one school to another. As high school, have you just noticed that's been going in this direction now?
Yeah, I think it's just more people are willing to do it now. More people are willing to move. Georgia High School office is obviously overwhelmed with people transferring and paperwork, and they can't police it like they need to police it because it's so widespread. It used to be a basketball thing where only basketball players were moving around with their AAU teammates, and that was really the only sport you had to worry about. But now it's pretty much every sport. Kids are moving around. Like you said, it's not just Grayson. A lot of people are getting transfers. Grayson seems to get a lot of them, but that seems to happen when you have a top program. Kids want to go play with their teammates or play with their friends and play with the top players that they met over football camps and that sort of thing. So and they want to go play for powerhouse programs that are going to be on TV. They're going to play a national schedule, and that certainly draws a lot of kids to Grayson. They want to go over there and be on TV. They're on ESPN this week. So certain schools become destinations for transfers more than others, but it is a pretty widespread problem in all sports, not just football, and a lot of schools are involved as well.
Yeah, it definitely is. But that was the top story that made national news once again in the state of Georgia. Let's get to the recap of some of the contests that took place this past week. Norcross got a 23-20 victory over Mill Creek, very close contest. I believe it went to overtime, a game-winning run. So it looked like it was the game of the week between two teams that have high aspirations for this year.
Yeah, it's a really exciting game. I mean, if you didn't have a team to root for in this one, you'd still enjoy watching it. It was a great double overtime game. Sadly for Mill Creek, it's their second double overtime loss this year. They also lost to Grayson in double overtime. I think Mill Creek's really close to breaking through. They've been playing phenomenal defense all year long, and they did so again in this one. It just comes down to they got to produce some offense somehow. But that defense did great. I think they were really impressed against an unbeaten Norcross team. Iman Hill had an interception for a touchdown on the defense. Connor Bell had a huge game with 18 tackles. And just really got to drum up some offense over there. But credit to Norcross. They made the plays that had to get the win. Zakai Barker had another awesome game. He had 18 tackles, a couple sacks. Jalen Garner had 14 tackles, four of them for losses. Zion Alexander and Josh Graham continue to star over there for that Norcross defense. And a rougher night than usual for the Norcross offense. But down at the end, they made plays when they needed to. Mason Kaplan and Trey Goodman. Hooking up there in overtime, and those guys have had great seasons so far. And kudos to Norcross for continuing their role, and they're getting back to region play this week with some momentum.
Yep, staying in the region, Duluth picked up a non-region win over North Clayton, 34-0. The Duluth quarterback was your offensive player of the week. He had a very big night on the field.
Yeah, Duluth had a great season so far. They have a chance to break some really, really good milestones. Certainly, quarterback Lonnie Ratliff had a great game, 300 yards passing. He really did well. And Niall Irvin continued his great season. He had 141 rushing yards, only needed 12 carries to get that. And Jaden Jones had three touchdowns as well, two catches, one rushing TD. So a lot of momentum over there at Duluth. I think they're pushing towards what's going to be their first state playoff berth since the mid-90s. So it's going to be a huge season, I think, for Duluth going down the stretch.
Another team that finally got a win and in the winning way was Berkmar. They're able to defeat Lakeside Atlanta 20-14. So the Patriots get their first victory of the 2020 campaign. Very exciting times for that team.
Yeah, it was. They got up early quick in this game and built a lead, and then were able to hang on. I guess you hate to see Lakeside lose too. Lakeside's got a fairly long losing streak going. But last time Berkmar won was the season finale last year against Lakeside. So it's good to see Berkmar get back to their winning ways. It's always tough in region play for the Patriots. They always have one of the tougher region schedules around, and it's good to see them go outside of the region, get a win, and maybe get some momentum going for these last few games.
Yeah, good for the Patriots. Moving on to Class 6A Region 8, Tecula We've talked so much about their backfield, and they really showed out against Habersham Central in a 50-13 win. Big efforts from Kyle Leffert and Blaine Jenkins.
Yeah, Kyle Leffert had a great game. He had 20 rushes, 183 yards, and four touchdowns. Also had a 29-yard catch. They kind of rode him in this one big time. But also, you need to point out Blaine Jenkins, the quarterback, had a great night. He hit his best game of the season, I think, 9 out of 13 passing, 209 yards, and two touchdowns. Also rushed for a touchdown. So if he emerges into a big-time threat down the stretch, it's really going to help DeCula going forward.
I'll say, how big is that for them to get a passing game going? We talk so much about their running backs and their rushing attack, but Jenkins with the two touchdown passes, how big is that for the team just to get that balance on the offense?
I think it's big time. I think that's what they've had the last couple seasons. They've had a passing game. They had some big-time wide receivers. They graduated, but they still have some good talent at the wide receiver position. I think Dylan Hands over there, Dylan Hands, an underrated player. He had four catches for 62 yards last week. And I think they get that passing game cranking because you know they're going to be able to run the ball. They always have a tough physical offensive line. If they get that passing game mixed in, it's definitely going to give them some balance that's going to be important when it comes to playoff time.
Yep, staying in the region, Lanier, Central Gwinnett, 37 to 7. Obviously, the Longhorns got a lot of offense, but your defensive player of the week came from the Lanier team as well.
Yeah, they love Giannis Kasende over there. He's a kid that's kind of emerged out of nowhere to be a big-time player. He's worked hard through the program. He had a pick six last week to kind of spark that game against Central. He's a rising prospect in the recruiting rankings as well. Teammate Rylan Cerna also had a pick six in this one, so two defensive touchdowns. Rylan continues to play at a high level. He had 12 tackles and three tackles for losses in this one. And another guy, Kyle King, was really a force on the defensive line for the Longhorns. He had four tackles for losses, three sacks, and four quarterback hurries. So certainly with him disrupting things up front, that was a big part of shutting down a Central Gwinnett offense that's been able to put up some points.
Yeah, and rounding out play in that region was Shiloh. The team fell to Winder Barrow 35-28. Close contest, but Shiloh was not able to come up with the win.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I think it was a game that Shiloh felt like they could have won and should have won. So I know it was tough to get over. But I look for this team to still kind of make a push and play well late in the season. There's a lot of talent over there. Antonio Meeks is one of my favorite players still. He did really well in this one. He's 4 out of 4 passing, 117 yards and a touchdown. Also carried the ball 21 times for 102 yards and two scores. So he's carrying a heavy, heavy load on that Shiloh offense. But it's been impressive what he's been able to do. He's going to be a very important going down the stretch. And Miles Smith also had a good game over there. He had 5 catches for almost 100 yards and a score. And he was very dangerous on kick and punt returns in that one as well.
Yep, and then wrapping up our recap is Central Cedar Grove, defeating Greater Atlanta Christian 33-6 in Class 3A Region 5. That loss snapped GAC's 40-game region unbeaten streak. So disappointing night for the Spartans.
Yeah, it was not necessarily that they lost. I think they just wanted to compete better. I think they don't feel like they played their best. Certainly they don't feel like they're 30 points worse than what Cedar Grove is. I just don't feel like GAC played their best that night, and that was frustrating to the players and the coaches, but still a lot to look forward to. I think they still can make a push for the number 2 seed in that region, and we'll definitely be in the force in the playoffs like they always are. Probably one of the bright spots in this game was the special teams play. Brandon Roundtree, their kicker, he provided the only points of the night and hit 2 long field goals, a 47-yarder and a 40-yarder. So he was huge in that game, and GAC's defense was put under a lot of pressure throughout the night. The offense really couldn't find any consistency to move the ball. Brooks Miller had an interception to lead the defense. Joseph Rose had 9 tackles. But a tough night all around for the Spartans, but I think they'll bounce back this week.
Which one of our games of the week will be on national television and more on the Gwinnett Daily Post Football Friday podcast? Stick around.
Hey guys, it's Amanda Lee, your local host and Gwinnett native. 2020 has been a different year for sure, but if the time has come for you and your family to buy, sell, or rent a new home, Peggy Slappy Properties is here to help. Peggy and her team have been in Gwinnett and surrounding areas for 38 years now, helping folks just like you and me. Peggy and her team are a little different. Her team of 35-plus realtors realize that fostering strong relationships within the community is the key to their business. Peggy's team of professionals can work with you regardless of circumstance. Residential homes, new homes, rentals, with listings all over the county. In today's climate, you hear a lot of noise from others on how they can help you. The difference is, at Peggy Slappy Properties, they're buying and selling for neighbors, family, and friends. Don't you believe you'll get the most value from a team that knows the lay of the land? Visit Peggy Slappy Properties online at PSPOnline.com or give them a call 24/7 at 770-271-5555. Peggy delivers the very best in Gwinnett and Georgia real estate because you deserve no less.
Welcome back to the Gwinnett Daily Post Football Friday podcast. We're joined once again by Gwinnett Daily Post sports editor, Will Hammond. Let's discuss our games of the week, starting with the one we've had circled on our calendar for weeks, Grayson hosting Parkview on ESPN. It's a Class 7A Region 4 contest. The Rams are looking to stay undefeated overall on the season, while the Panthers, they haven't lost a region game this season as well. So, Will, this is the game that, as I said, we've talked about for a few weeks and been previewing, and then you add the Garcia factor at quarterback. There's so many storylines with this contest. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack on this game. I think the national TV thing alone makes it a very interesting game. It's a not only a chance for those Grayson kids to be on TV, but also the Parkview kids. I think it's an exciting opportunity for both these kids to showcase Gwinnett football a little bit, see what Gwinnett does, and show it on a national level. I think that's exciting for one. But then like you said, the other angle, and I'm sure it's going to be pumped up a lot on the TV broadcast, is the Jake Garcia transfer to Grayson. They're going to talk about his move, the background of his move into Grayson coming so late into the season, that sort of thing. And also, it's going to be interesting to see, how do they use Jake Garcia? Does he play right away? Does he
That was my question. We know he's eligible, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to play. Have you heard anything from the coaching staff about that yet? Or are they keeping it quiet?
I have not. I think Parkview would probably like to know if he was going to play too. That would probably be interesting. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see that they bring him in right away. Do they mix him in some snaps here and there? How much has he been able to pick? He's only been practicing a week with his new team. So, obviously, he's not going to have a huge grasp on the playbook so far. So, but it would be interesting to see. They definitely got to – if he's going to play a role down the stretch, they have to get him in there and get him some action. So, I don't know if it will be this week or in the future, but he's definitely a kid. He's good enough that he's going to be in there and playing at some point. So, we'll see how that plays out. Might be this week.
Yeah, and it's not gonna, we talk about Grayson so much, but Parkview, this is a team that I know they've lost earlier in the season, but they're still undefeated on their campaign. They could still win a region championship and achieve a lot of things this year.
No, for sure, yeah. And I think Parkview's got a lot of confidence. They've won a lot the last several seasons. They were in the Final Four last year. So a lot of these kids are used to winning and used to playing deep in the playoffs. So playing tough teams, playing top teams is nothing new to Parkview. They're not going to be intimidated by the atmosphere, by the TV, by the Grayson, the aura of Grayson. I think a lot of times when people play Grayson and they see that national ranking, they're kind of beat when they come off the bus. But a lot of teams, they aren't intimidated. I think you saw that with Mill Creek earlier this year. They came out and played them hard and weren't intimidated by the national ranking there at Grayson. But Parkview's going to have to play really well. I think Parkview's got to get Cody Brown loose in the running game, Tyler Curtis in the running game, getting it going. That's going to be tough against the Rams defense that's really stout. And they got to be ready to stop the run as well, because Phil Moffa and that Grayson rushing attack, that's kind of been key to their success this season. So if they can shut down the running game, that gives them a pretty good chance. But then you bring in the Garcia factor. Is he going to play? How much is he going to play? And does he help that Grayson passing attack a lot?
Yep, and our second game of the week is North Gwinnett facing Collins Hill. This is in Class 7A, Region 8. These teams are a mirror image of each other, same overall record, and they're both undefeated in the region. So once again, another contest that has significant implications in the region standings and for postseason when the seedings come out.
Yeah, I think you look at the winner of this game, they're both Suwannee schools, so it's kind of the battle of Suwannee. But you look at this game, and I think the winner has the inside track to the region championship. And if North Gwinnett is able to win, I think that gives them almost certainly a region championship, because they'll already own victories over Collins Hill and Mill Creek. So it gives a chance for North Gwinnett to move really close to that region title. They've kind of owned the region the last several years, and so that'd be a huge win for them. But if Collins Hill wins this game, it kind of opens things back up. Collins Hill kind of becomes the front runner in the region. And they still have Mill Creek on the schedule, so that's a tough game. But I think the winner, if Collins Hill's able to get a win here, I think it really give them an inside track on winning that region championship. So I'm interested to see how it plays out. I think it's one of the top games in the state of Georgia as well. It gets overlooked a little bit maybe by the Parkview-Grayson matchup, but I think this is a very huge game for Gwinnett football and within that region. So interesting to see how it plays out. Both these teams have been kind of up and down early in the season, but that's kind of the way 2020 has been. You never know what you're going to get week to week, but mm-hmm. I think we're late enough in the season now. Both these teams are playing well. Both teams have an identity of sorts. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
I think this contest is an example of the team, both these teams, North Gwinnett and Collins Hill, that you see them lose early in the season in non-region contests and you kind of write them off. but they start peaking at the right time. And when the region play starts, and I agree with you, the winner of this contest has an inside track, I think, for a top seed and host some home contests, which I think home field advantage is going to be a significant factor. It always is in the postseason, but especially with all the conditions and things going on. If you have to do all of the precautions and get on the bus and travel, I think that's one less worry that you have. So that's a major contest.
I think the offenses are going to have a tough time in this one. I think both these defenses are excellent for Collinsville and North Gwinnett. So offenses might be in for a rough night, probably a low-scoring game.
Let's move on to Class 7A, Region 7, starting with Brookwood and Newton. Now, this is an all-region contest, and the Broncos look to continue to get some wins.
Yeah, Brookwood's been impressive so far. I think Newton's kind of been up and down early in the season. They got a little bit later start than the other teams around here, but it's going to be a tough atmosphere. It's always tough. Newton's got talent, and it's always tough to play at Newton, much tougher to play Newton down there. It's a great atmosphere at their games, and Brookwood's going to have to play. Brookwood's still a young team. They're going to have to play well, have to play clean, but I think the Broncos will be able to do that.
And also you have South Gwinnett facing Peachtree Ridge. So this is a contest, non-region, but still two teams in the county that I'm sure are familiar with each other.
Yeah, I'm pretty intrigued by this game. I think it's going to be interesting to see how this one plays out as well. Both these teams are kind of similar. Both got off to really nice starts this year. So I know doesn't count in region standings for either one of these teams, but both have been successful early in the season. It's good to see them matching up. I think it's a really, really even matchup. I look to be a very close game. Both have done really well on the line. I think it's been surprising for South Gwinnett. They've played so well up front. Peachtree Ridge has a big veteran offensive line as well. So I think whoever runs the ball better in this one, they both like to run the football. Whoever runs the ball better is going to get the win, but I foresee it being a really close game.
Mm-hmm. And Class 7A, Region 7, we'll start off with Norcross facing Discovery. We talked about the Blue Devils, and they get right back at it against a foe from the county in Discovery.
Yeah, I don't think Norcross was happy the way it went against Mill Creek. Obviously, they pulled out a win and gutted it out, so they were happy with that, but don't think they played as well as they would have liked to play it in that one, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. Had a tough time getting it going there and mainly putting up points, had a tough time putting it in the end zone. I think they'll get that corrected this week. They're certainly the heavy favorite over Discovery. Discovery is still kind of young and up-and-coming program, but as Coach Maloof told me this week, you can't just walk into Discovery and think you're going to win. They have some players over there at Discovery. Coach Hill at Discovery does a great job with those kids, and I think Norcross gets the win here, but hopefully Discovery has a good showing too, because I've been impressed with what they've been able to build over there.
Another all-region contest in the county, Archer faces Berkmar.
Yeah, another one of these mismatch games. I know, like we said, Berkmar has some tough games in the region, and this is definitely one of them. Archer's a young, experienced team to start the season, but they're starting to hit their stride, and Berkmar's a team that's going to have a rough go in region play. I think, like we said all season, I think Archer and Norcross is going to decide the region championship in this region. Both those are top teams. Archer's played a very difficult schedule. Berkmar has not. I think this is going to come down to the Archer kind of taking control pretty fast and building up a big halftime lead. Hopefully they'll get some of the backups in the second half and get those guys some experience.
No, no, Meadow Creek wants to stay in that championship contention as far as the region. A lot of things, still a few games to play, but if they want to do that, they're going to have to win against Dunwoody, a team that on paper looks like they can handle pretty easily.
Yeah, I think so. I think Meadow Creek's probably the favorite in this one. I look for the Mustangs to get the win, but like you said, it's not one that can overlook. Meadow Creek's not going to roll in there and just beat you because they're Meadow Creek. They have to play well. They have to run the ball well like they always do. And I think they're in a really good position to make the playoffs again. I think Coach Carrera and his guys can get them back in the postseason. Winning this game against Dunwoody would certainly make sure that they're on track for that mission of getting to the playoffs.
And then Duluth, they face Lakeside Atlanta, a team we mentioned earlier. Duluth looks like they're going to get another win and try to keep their winning ways this season.
I think that's kind of been the story of the Gwinnett football so far in terms of like an underdog story. I think Duluth's really putting it together this year. Coach Jones and his guys are starting to build something special over there at Duluth. They have an overmatch game again this week. I think they're going to beat Lakeside handily. Lakeside's really in a long winning losing streak, and Duluth's really got the momentum going. They got a powerful offense that's really clicking right now. So I think we're going to see some big offensive numbers out of the Wildcats this week and another pretty lopsided victory as they push towards what they hope is breaking that long drought of missing the state playoffs.
I think so. Moving on to Class 7A Region 8, Mill Creek. We talked about their tough loss to Norcross. They face Mountain View in a region tilt.
Yeah, so this is a pretty big rivalry game up in the Mill Creek Mountain View cluster. A lot of these kids grew up together, and some of the Mountain View kids used to be in the Mill Creek cluster. So really a lot of friendships that cross boundaries up in that area. A lot of people see each other at restaurants, at stores around town. So it's an interesting matchup in region play, but also a really good rivalry as well, because of the proximity and because of those friendships. For Mountain View, just trying to get some momentum back. They've kind of hit a rough patch in their season, and I think the same can be said for Mill Creek, particularly on the opposite side of the ball. Mill Creek's really got to find some touchdowns, find a way to put up some points. Mountain View has traditionally been pretty good on defense, played Mill Creek pretty close. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I think it gives Mill Creek a slight edge being at home, and certainly Mill Creek wins this when they're in a pretty good shot of returning to the state playoffs.
Yeah, moving on to Class 6A, Region 8. Shiloh, that tough loss to Window Barrow, they got to turn it around quick and face Buford. And this contest really for first place in the region when you look at the statistics and the standings.
Yeah, Buford, I think, is going to keep rolling. I think still yeah. Buford, Aquila, and Lanier are the top three teams there for me when you look at it. And I think it's a tough test for Shiloh. I know they get Buford at home, but Buford's pretty talented on both sides of the ball, and certainly have the experience of so many state playoff games and a state championship last year. Even though they have some young faces there, I think they're playing well, starting to hit their stride as well in the latter part of the season. I know it was kind of a rough start for Buford of the season until they got rolling, but I think right now you're seeing Buford play pretty good football. It's going to be a tough test for Shiloh to hang with those guys.
Yep, and Central Gwinnett, staying in the region, faces Window Barrow. So a chance for Central Gwinnett, I think, Window Barrow is a strong team as well, but a competitive contest, I think, overall in this one.
Yeah, it looks like a close game to me. I think these teams both played Shiloh pretty close. I know Central lost by a touchdown, and Window Barrow won by a touchdown against Shiloh. So I think they match up pretty evenly. I think this will be one of the closer games of the week. Playing at home at Central gives them a little bit of an advantage there. I know they feel good playing at the Castle. I think it's going to come down to Central Gwinnett maybe making the plays in the end. I think they're due to break through. This will be their first region win. So I'd like to see the Black Knights get it done.
The Castle, I love it. The Black Knights, one of my favorite nicknames in the state. Moving on to Class 2A Region 5, Greater Atlanta Christian. We mentioned they dropped their first region contest in a very long time against the defending state champs in Cedar Grove. They have to turn around and face Sandy Creek this weekend.
Yeah, there's no time to lick the wounds there, GAC. They got to get back to business here. Sandy Creek's been one of the perennial powers in Georgia for a long time. Have some state championships down there and a lot of talent. So GAC's really got to recover fast if they want to. I think, obviously, they're in a tough spot in the region right now, losing to Cedar Grove. They're probably not going to keep their region championship streak alive. So best they can do is probably get the number two seed in the region. And to do that, they're going to have to beat Sandy Creek this week. They lose out when they might be looking at a road game in the state playoffs. So I know this is a big one for the Spartans. If they can go down there and get a win at Sandy Creek, it'll be great going forward and certainly give them an inside track to get that number two seed and home game in the state playoffs.
Yep, and then wrapping up our previews in Class A, Region 5, Hebron Christian dropped a contest 42-3 at Mount Vernon Presbyterian last week. They get right back at it against Wesleyan in an all-Gwinnett affair.
Yeah, Wesleyan's playing over at Hebron. It's these two; they're both Gwinnett private schools, but they've never played before in varsity football. So yeah. It'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. A lot of similar kids on both sides of the ball, so I think they match up fairly evenly. I think what it comes down to, Wesleyan has a little bit more experience as a football program, experienced more success. I think they're more established as a program and more established on the lines. I think you'll see an offensive and defensive line advantage for the Wolves in this one, and that's probably what it's going to come down to. I like Wesleyan to win this one. Hopefully Hebron can hang in there and make it a tough game. Guys like Jack Luttrell and Colton have played well at quarterback. Those guys have been stellar players so far this season. So Hebron's got a chance, but I really like Wesleyan in this one.
And then Providence Christian, they face Mount Vernon Presbyterian once again in the same region. Providence is looking to come back from their 42-12 loss to Holy Innocents last week. So the Providence team still looking to get on that winning side of things this year.
Yeah, much like Hebron with a first-year coach and Coach Luttrell, Providence has a coach, Jonathan Beverly. He's in his first season, so he's kind of trying to establish some things there. He's built a lot of energy in that program. I think there's a lot to be excited about. Still searching for their first win. It's going to be a tough test. Mount Vernon's pretty good. Be a tough test to get a win this week, but I think Coach Beverly's building things the right way. Look forward to seeing what he can do in the future. But like I said, he's in the year one and in a weird year one with COVID going on. So I think in the future he's going to build quite the program over there. But this was a very tough year to get going for a lot of folks, especially the guys that were coming in late as first-time head coaches to the program.
We're going to take one final break, and when we return, it's a jam-packed weekend for college football, and our NFL spotlight are on long-snapping brothers from Buford here on the Gwinnett Daily Post Football Friday podcast. Engineer Solutions of Georgia.
Hey, Atlanta, this is Jay and Lewis, owners of Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Lewis, what should a homeowner do if they have a crack in their block wall, corner of their door, window, or concrete foundation?
Well, Jay, if it's a diagonal crack, this lets us know that they should be concerned and there could be a serious problem. Then they should call our office at 678-ESOG-NOW and set up an appointment to have one of our qualified professional technicians come out to their property to take a look at the problem.
I'm consumer investigator Dale Cardwell. I've done the research already, so you don't have to. You can trust Engineered Solutions of Georgia.
Give Engineered Solutions of Georgia a call at 678-ESOG-NOW.
Engineered Solutions of Georgia.
Welcome back to the Gwinnett Daily Post Football Friday podcast. All right, well, let's look at some college football action that's going to take place this weekend. Georgia, coming off of a bye week, is going to face Kentucky. So the Bulldogs, we talked on our last show, they lost to Alabama, but the sky isn't falling. There's still a lot of good things that can happen for Georgia this year, but it does start in SEC East play. You got to beat Kentucky if you want to get to the SEC Championship game and make a push for the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely no time to worry about the future goals. I think you got to look at what's in front of you, and that's a Kentucky team that's very experienced. It sounds like Joey Gatewood, the Auburn transfer, is going to start at quarterback for Kentucky in this one. So that's a little bit of a different look. He's a big physical runner. I know Kentucky really likes to run the ball. They have probably the most veteran offensive line in the SEC. Of course, Georgia has a defense that's going to match up with that pretty well. I think the Bulldogs win this one. It's going to be an interesting test, obviously going up to Kentucky. But I think when it comes down to it, Georgia has the talent to get it done.
They can't sleepwalk. It's a noon kickoff Eastern time, yeah, which is very unusual. I think it was I don't know where I saw the stat. It's definitely the first time this year they've had a noon kickoff, but I think it's the first time outside of Georgia Tech, that game tends to be at noon. But maybe the last SEC game was a few years ago that was noon kickoff. So they got to wake up early and make sure they don't, because you can sleepwalk through a game and put yourself in trouble.
Yeah, definitely. In a road game like that, it definitely gets you worried. And I think that was one of the questions that Coach Smart had to answer this week is the noon start, if that bothers you, if Georgia maybe hadn't had success there in the past. I think, was it the South Carolina game a noon start last year that they lost?
I believe so. It was definitely an early kickoff. Yeah, noon or the 3:30 spot. It was.
But yeah, they can't mess around with this game. Like I said, Kentucky's got a lot of veterans, and they're going to have to run the ball well. Kentucky's got a really good secondary. It's going to be tough to throw against those guys. So I think establishing the running game is going to be important.
I think so. Georgia definitely needs to get balance on the offense. Georgia Tech, they face Notre Dame. Obviously, Notre Dame, a top five or top 10 nationally ranked team, depending on what poll you're looking at. But it's really more about Georgia Tech in this one. Disappointing performance at Boston College, lost 48-27. So after some nice wins against Louisville and against the opener of Florida State, it seems like it's, I don't say panic time for the Yellow Jackets, but I think for Coach Collins, this is a really landmark contest for him and this rebuilding process that he has.
Cool. Yeah, it is. It's a thing where Georgia Tech's had an up and down season, but Notre Dame's a very talented team. It's going to be tough to get an upset there, but it would be a huge boost for the program if Georgia Tech was somehow able to get a victory in that one over a nationally ranked top five opponent like that. And just that would build a lot of the energy for the program. I know Coach Collins has done a lot of things to get people excited down there, but the one thing he really needs to do is get some victories, and that's going to drum up excitement more than anything. So a victory like this would be huge for that program and to kind of put them on the map nationally again.
And let's talk about Notre Dame for a little bit. I know that they take pride in being an independent program, and for a lot of reasons, they've taken advantage of that. But I think the all-ACC schedule they have this year is beneficial for them recruiting in the Southeast, because they said they're playing here in Atlanta against Georgia Tech. They play Clemson. I think Clemson goes to them, but still, I think the Southeast is a big recruiting area for them to focus on. And they're playing a lot of teams from the Carolinas, from Georgia, from Florida, and even some Northeastern teams that are from the AC, but we'll focus on the South. I think this is how's Notre Dame perceived in the recruiting front as trying to get players from down here, because they got to compete with all the SEC and ACC schools to try to go to South Bend?
Yeah, Notre Dame being an independent, that's kind of one of the draws. They're able to recruit all over the nation, and they are national recruiting power. I know they signed some local kids there, but they'll go anywhere and everywhere to get kids. And Florida especially is one of the recruiting hotbeds for Notre Dame. And they'll come into Georgia and get some kids every now and then as well. They're certainly recruiting this area heavily. But I agree. I think it helps them a lot recruiting-wise to kind of get their name out there. And I think in this season with COVID, I think it also maybe gives them a little bit more credit if they want to get in the national playoff conversation. They're playing an independent schedule. That might be tough to pull off, but by playing an ACC schedule, it gives them a little bit more credit if they have to go through Clemson and battle ACC teams and play a full schedule. I think that gives them credit in the eyes of the college football playoff.
Yeah, it's just a one-year thing. We know Notre Dame's going to go back to being an independent, but for 1 year, I think it does help their profile in this part of the country. Let's assess the Georgia State Panthers. They host nationally ranked Coastal Carolina, but also the Panthers won a thrilling contest, 36-34 at Troy last week. You highlighted several Gwinnett players on their defensive end that helped the Panthers earn that victory.
Yeah, I was able to watch this one on TV. I wanted to make it a point to do that because we had so many Gwinnett guys on both sides of the ball, and particularly on the defensive side, a lot of those guys stood out. For Georgia State, Jalen Jones made a huge play, broke up two passes, but broke up one in the end zone that was intercepted by a teammate that kind of stopped a Troy drive. Blake Carroll, linebacker from Mountain View, plays at Georgia State. He had 8 solo tackles, 1 for a loss, and forced a fumble. Also knocked the Troy quarterback out of the game with one of his quarterback pressures.
Yep, that happened first early in the contest. They went with the backup free. That was the backup for Troy. But that was a very big play for him to get him out of there.
Carroll's done a great job. Victor Hayward from Mill Creek did a good job on the defense. And on the other side of the ball at Troy, Jaden McDonald from North Gwinnett and Will Cholo from Archer were both huge. Jaden had 16 tackles. 3 of those were for losses. And Cholo had 5 tackles, 1 for a loss and a sack. And he forced a fumble that her teammate returned for a touchdown. So both those guys were stars on the defensive side of the ball as well for Troy. So just Gwinnett guys all over the field doing things on the defensive side of the ball. So that was pretty exciting to see.
Yeah, very good for the Panthers. They face, once again, nationally ranked Coastal Carolina, another noon kickoff. But they're used to playing at noon. They actually kind of like that. I talked to people there because I think this will be on one of the ESPNs. So I think this is a very big national opportunity for the Panthers. Were there any other standouts on the collegiate level from this past week from Gwinnett?
Yeah, I think sticking with you mentioned Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina beat Georgia Southern last week, 28-14, and Fred Payton, who played quarterback at both Parkview and Peachtree Ridge here in Gwinnett, he got the start at quarterback for Coastal Carolina and led that victory against Georgia Southern. He completed 15 out of 28 passes, 252 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Also rushed for 38 yards there at quarterback. He's a very talented football player, and he stepped up when Coastal Carolina needed it last week to get the big win over Georgia Southern.
And we're going to wrap up our stuff with the NFL spotlight. You chose a pair of long-snapping brothers from Buford, a very unique story. The guys who seem, I did my research, they followed the same path from high school to the pros.
Yeah, the long snappers don't get a lot of credit unless something goes wrong. So I figured we could do these guys.
No, that's great.
Yeah, both created it. They developed a talent for long snapping back when they were at Buford and kind of developed it. They went to the snapping camps and developed into highly recruited snappers, both of them, Blake Ferguson and Reed Ferguson. Reed kind of took the first step at LSU. He was LSU's long snapper for 4 years, and right behind him, his younger brother Blake came in and was long snapper to LSU for 4 years. So he won a national championship there last year. And so just 8 straight years of Ferguson's long snapping at LSU was interesting enough in itself. But the fact that both brothers have made it to the pros and made an impact in the pros, they're both starting long snappers now. Reed's the long snapper for the Bills, and Blake's the long snapper for the Dolphins. So not only NFL long snappers, but in the same division. So they'll play each other twice a year in the future in an NFL game. So just an interesting storyline there for both those guys, and glad they get to see each other a couple times every year. And for us, we're just excited for those kids to be able to make it in the NFL. And if you can make a career out of long snapping, that's the way to do it. You don't get beat up too much, and you get a long football pro football career if you can establish yourself at long snapper. And I think both these guys are going to do that.
There's a lot to unpack there. First of all, I remember on a personal note, when my nephew, he was being recruited and he played at the collegiate level, and we went to the Georgia camp. I'm aging myself when Mark Richt was there. Mm-hmm. And he didn't play. He was actually, he played linebacker, so he played on defense. But the emphasis on the special teams portion of the camp was surprising to me. All the coaches there, Coach Richt was there looking at the snappers and the kickers. They take it very seriously. So if you're listening to this, focus on special teams. If your son or is make if they could be a kicker or a long snapper or be a good special teamer, that is looked at in a very big way. So that's the first thing. But then also, LSU. That's just interesting that they went to Buford and then to LSU. Was it just the fact that that was one of the schools recruiting one, because you only have one long snapper, I guess, on a roster. So it's kind of like a kicker you recruit every year or two in a way, because you could be some walk-ons. Were they walk-ons? Were they scholarship? Like, what was their process to go from Buford to LSU?
Yeah, they were scholarship. They were actually recruited as long snappers.
Good.
Les Miles was the head coach at the time recruiting Reed, and he brought him in. He was a highly ranked long snapper. I think maybe the number one long snapper in the country for the rankings they do for those guys. So it's just interesting the path that they took. I think both those guys showed impressive talent for it. I think you can see early on the guys that can do it, and it takes loads of practice and loads of consistency to be able to do that job week in and week out, and putting it on target at the right pace. And both these guys have proven they're consistent in doing that. So just awesome to see those guys do that.
And you're right. And this is the part I wanted to mention, that a long career, I've seen guys in their mid to late 30s come out of retirement in the NFL just to be a long snapper. So it's one of those things where it's a position that for those two guys, if they can stay healthy and consistent, they can reach a very long career in that field. So that's very good for those guys.
Yeah, you look at it's a long career. You always see long snappers play 13, 14, 15 years in the league because teams get somebody they can trust in that position, and they kind of want to stick with it. And I think that's what they found. It's funny, LSU's long snapper now is also a freshman from Buford, Quentin Skinner. So they found kind of a long snapper.
Is he a long lost cousin or something related?
Maybe. Yeah, they certainly found the high school they like there with the snappers and kind of stuck with it.
Thank you for listening to the Gwinnett Daily Post Football Friday podcast, your hyper-local news on the run. Thank you to Will for joining us, as well as our sponsors. Grab a copy of today's paper and visit GwinnettDailyPost.com for complete details on the stories we've discussed, plus more stories that affect you and the residents of Gwinnett County. Subscribe and share this podcast to get all the latest updates. And if you have a comment or question, we'd love to hear it. Just call the podcast comment line at 404-997-8655. We might even share your comment on an upcoming show. Gwinnett Daily Post podcast is produced by BG Ad Group. Marcel Perdue, producer. Jacob Sutherland, director. Copyright 2020. All rights reserved.
Be creative, innovative, passionate. Be excellent, inspiring, driven. Be faithful, disciplined, prepared. At Union University, you will thrive in a Christ-centered community and be equipped for success in your life and career. Begin your journey today. At Union University, be transformed.